Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
This is Ross Coulthart, and you are listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. Delighted to be joined for a breakdown by returning multiple-time guest now, co-host of Liminal Frames and Calling All Beings. Nathan, welcome back, mate. How are you?
Doing great, Andy. Thanks for having me back. Good to be with you, as always. Hope things are going well.
Yes, they are. They are. Dan's off still trekking around the United States of America, sporadically posts online to see where he is, if folks are keeping up to date with him and his partner's travels these days. So, a lot of news items that people were asking me to comment on, touch on, and I thought it's been a week or two. So good to get somebody on, Nathan. And of course, you were available at late notice as well. So down to my horrendous scheduling and lack of forward planning. So thank you for that, mate. Let's dive straight into it, because there's a lot of little nuggets to go on. And I did reach out to the listeners to ask, is there anything particular people wanted covered, touched on, and everything else. A barrage of folks, Nathan, wanted me to discuss my new book that's coming out and available for pre-order, The Atlas of Unidentified Flying Objects. The link's in the description. I'm not going to go into that, Nathan. I don't need to name the folks. Oh, thank you, Nathan. Yeah, cheers for that. shameless plug getting in early, folks. But thank you to people who have pre-ordered so far. Appreciate it. But no, there's a lot of actual news kicking about. And speaking of books coming out, Jay Stratton, who does have a book coming out, he is, of course, the former director of the UAP Task Force, Defense Intelligence Senior Executive, retired. He is a guy, for those who may be newer to the UFO topic, seems to have had a hand in so much of the UFO, UAP conversation over the decades, or at least a decade, in the background in the United States. He seems to have been one of the guys. Is that fair to say, Nathan? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right. Jay seems to be a really influential player in that group. And, you know, I find it interesting kind of his, the contrasting styles that we see with Jay Stratton, who's been very quiet behind the scenes, clearly still interested in this topic, still involved, with some of the more outspoken in the spotlight kind of individuals like Lou Elizondo. You know, they're an interesting pairing there. The two of them, clearly their paths have crossed and they've worked together before, but an interesting dynamic in their approaches to kind of pushing for this in the public eye.
Yeah, and it's a real interesting dynamic, and we're going to get on to why I've brought Jay Stratton up. I mean, the recent weaponized was Jeremy Corbell and George Knapp re-releasing one of their first ever interviews that was with Jay Stratton and saying, this is really important. I don't think, I saw some people commenting, they must be running low on content. I think they've done that for a reason, folks. I think there's something due to happen. And this isn't from a place of knowledge, genuinely speculation. I imagine they're putting that out there because it's about to be relevant for a reason.
Yeah.
I don't think Jay Stratton's book is due to be released any week now, because I think we would see that. Like, Lou Elizondo's book was online for months and months and months and months and months before it was available to pre-order. You could see it, and publishers were pushing dates back, and they put on generic placeholder dates. We've not even got that really yet for Jay Stratton, so I can't see Jay's book being out till later in the year at the earliest. So perhaps there's some movement in the background there, but he very much seems to have been the guy who ran ATIP as we know it. Oh, sorry, OSAP as we know it, which then changed into, and this is where it gets murky, changed into ATIP. That change seems to be of one they wanted to make official, and ATIP would have been a true black budget special access program. Let's really get down and dirty with this work we're doing and really expand on it. They didn't get that permission. The folks involved started to step away. In and around that time, Lou Elizondo had been brought in to be part of that. He carried on the work of ATIP as a legitimate entity, but not necessarily an official program as such. And that's where there's a whole lot of murkiness. And I think Jay Stratton's book may clear some of that up, as Lou Elizondo's book started to allude to that more and more. But he was essentially Lou's boss, it seems, and the boss of many others while at OSAP. And they're both with the same book publisher as well, which is interesting. And that's when you say they've got those paths crossed, not just in a professional capacity, but now in their life after the UFO topic professionally and in government, which I find really, I can't imagine you're going to get a book, and some people expect Jay Stratton's book to come out and slam Lou Elizondo and, you know, really put down Lou's story, when it's the same publishing company, the same people. There must have been crossover there. I can't imagine Lou Elizondo being like, guys, get Jay on board. Jay, do you want to write a book for these guys? Yep, cool. Absolutely drag me through the mud. I've got no problem with that. Right. I can't see that being the case unless, do you think otherwise? Or
no, I think you're right. And I think Jay is a very calculating person. I mean, I think both Jay and Lou are very calculating in what they do. They have very different personality styles. That seems really evident in their engagements with the public on this issue. When Jay makes a move, I think it's very calculated, very intentional. He's going to do it when it feels like it has the greatest impact. Remember, Jay is the guy that also had that incredible soundbite from the Age of Disclosure trailer, that he's seen the craft and seen the bodies with his own eyes. Now, obviously, we haven't seen that documentary yet, but that's an example of Jay putting his name out there, putting his words behind something that I think he believed would make a huge impact in the public space. So, yeah, I agree. I don't think that I would be surprised to see a lot of public kind of mudslinging between the two of these individuals. I think that they may have their differences, certainly in the approach behind the scenes, and but they're both professionals, and I think are treating each other very professionally in their public exchanges.
Yeah, you mentioned Age of Disclosure. I had literally just made a note to say there's no update yet. People still ask me. I genuinely don't know anyone who has seen the documentary outside of the listeners who are at South by Southwest when it premiered over those couple of days. There's been no updates yet. It's a funny one because it seems to be that the time to release this would have been probably around the time we were all discussing it and just after it got its debut, and that perhaps any impact, and I definitely hope not. I want any UFO content to do well, to help get the topic out into the mainstream, especially one that seems to have had a little bit of money spent on it, a little bit of time spent on it as well, and got some real heavy hitters. I'm still wary of the comments of the time saying it's quite dry in terms of it is talking head after talking head after talking head. There is no big reveals. There is no big cut to UFO. There's no splicing of footage of spheres and triangles and saucers. It's not like that. It's very much, I think it's going to be for a niche audience, but even then, I think the UFO audience will be split because many folks are going to want to see something different and new. And I don't necessarily think they're going to get that in terms of what they're thinking. We've probably talked about it before, Nathan, but again, where are you at with Age of Disclosure and kind of where things are at with that whole project?
Yeah, I think, look, these things have a timing benefit and deficit. So I agree with you. I think it would have been great to have seen it released when it was screened at South by Southwest. That was really when we thought it was coming out. Now that it hasn't been, the timing, sort of have to look to what is the next good news cycle that releasing this film may coincide with. And I think what we're seeing in the near future likely is the release of the fiscal year 2026 National Defense Authorization Act legislation, which would be introduced in the House typically. We haven't seen that introduced yet. There's been rumors going around that it's going to have the first ever $1 trillion budget for the Department of Defense, which is absolutely insane. So what will be in that language? Will we see a reintroduction of the UAP language that we saw from the Schumer-Reynolds Amendment the last time around, last couple times around? Seems like there's still interest in including that. So I'll be looking to see if that is a part of it. And if so, do we see sort of consecutive or news drops like Age of Disclosure, as well as these book releases? Do we see these things happen in a kind of simultaneous fashion? I agree with you that it doesn't seem to be a very sensationalized documentary.
Yep.
But it's trying to hit folks, I think, with the weight of the evidence and the pedigree of the individuals that are presenting that. So if it all hits at the right time, and if the news media, the U.S. news media, picks that up and emphasizes that there are some very, very high level people in this film lending weight to this, then we could see passage of that legislation in the NDAA this year, which would be really huge. It would be the year we would hope to see these significant changes be put into effect.
I suppose then, if I'm going to put my optimistic hat on for a moment, I like to wear different hats depending on what time of day it is here. But if there was going to be folks who knew of a rough timeline of potential hearings, potential NDAAs coming out with disclosure language or disclosure acts going back into it, and what was coming down the road, the folks involved are in this documentary, and they would be able to have conversations with, let's just say, Netflix. Everyone knows Netflix, to say, if you're going to pick this up, you release it now, or you hang fire till around July, August, you hang fire till around October, November, because this will be happening, and that's your ideal time. You want to release a Christmas movie in November, December. You don't want to be Homer Simpson selling your pumpkins in January, because that just, it's pointless. You've missed the mark. You're not selling when the value is high. So for me, that's what I'm hoping that they're able to do in the background, because I can't imagine they would struggle to sell a documentary with that hype behind it.
Agree. Fair is a big name, and it seems like it's a really quality production, so it's going to get picked up. So that tells me it's just a matter of timing it, so we'll see.
And speaking of timing then, Jay Stratton released this comment around FBI involvement in the UFO topic. We always hear about the CIA, we hear about the Air Force, those are the kind of big organizations that tend to be involved. The Navy, to maybe a lesser extent than the Air Force, but maybe more recent when we hear about the Tic Tac event and all that kind of stuff. But here's MJ Stratton's statement he released online on X. I've noticed a growing wave of speculation suggesting that the FBI only recently became involved in the UAP issue. As someone who has worked closely with the FBI for many years, I want to offer some clarity. The FBI has long taken the UAP issue extremely seriously. When I began building the US government's UAP task force 7 years ago, drawing on the foundation and insights I developed from creating prior government UAP efforts, the FBI was one of my early stops. I had already developed strong relationships within the Bureau and knew they understood just how real and complex the situation is and all that is at stake. From the start, the FBI was a key partner and brought the full weight of their enterprise to support the mission. These are seasoned professionals, focused and serious about their responsibilities. They stood with me in classified briefings to Congress and across government, and they remain a trusted and valuable part of the broader effort today. I continue to work closely with the FBI on all matters related to UAP, and I'm grateful for their commitment and our ongoing collaboration. They are truly silent heroes who choose to stay in the shadows and work tirelessly on the UAP issue in the best interest of the American people. Thoughts on Stratton coming out on the FBI then?
I mean, I think it's really important that he set the record straight. We certainly heard that the FBI has had an involvement in this topic. I think it speaks a lot as well to the maybe contradictory or different factions within the government that are pro this topic, anti this topic. You mentioned the CIA tends to be very standoffish and not, you know, releasing much information about what they're doing here. But the FBI, on the other hand, seems to be eager to get involved and is asking for funding and wants to be a bigger player in looking into UAP. And we've heard that they've been part of these sort of investigations in the past. It'll be very interesting to see. Remember as well that they were involved with the drone flap things that took place earlier in the year, and they were rumored to be involved in many of those investigations. And then, speaking of those drones, we recently heard from the Transportation Secretary, the U.S. Transportation Secretary, when interviewed, I think by maybe it was News Nation. You know, he said that they still don't know what it was. They really don't know what those drones were, and so that's fascinating to me. Another contradiction to what the FAA stated. That these were just hobby drones that had all been given FAA approval to fly around. So another example of these agencies, maybe one agency having different agenda than another, and the FBI seemingly, at least based on statements like this from Stratton, and things we've heard elsewhere, they seemingly are more interested in getting to the bottom of this than perhaps some of these other agencies are, at least from a public standpoint.
Yeah. Was it Congressman Eric Burleson who had commented that the FBI a couple of weeks ago had briefed himself and other members of the Secrets Task Force?
That's right.
On UAP, and they were really impressed with the quality and caliber of the briefing, I think more so than what they had got from Arrow, which brought this whole FBI conversation to light. I think people at that point jumped on this thinking, oh, the FBI are now involved. Stratton's came out and cleared that up and went, no, the FBI have had an interest and been involved in this for a long time. So, yeah, good to get it cleared up. And on that, we have Representative Ana Paulina Luna, Congresswoman, who caused a bit of a stir online. I'll just read her tweet. Her is it still a tweet? Is that what they call them? An X?
I guess it's a post, an X post.
Yeah, on our X post. So she basically said, clearly the government has a spending problem. After reviewing our investigations through the Oversight Task Force, I am now convinced that Arrow should be defunded. There is another organization doing the job better than Arrow, and they're offering full transparency. Defund Arrow. And Nathan, I'm just going to read out an email I got this morning from a listener, and they gave me permission. I'm going to leave their name out just in case they don't want it in there, but it's literally a random listener. And they said to me, Andy, I just got off a flight during which I had a conversation with a Washington, D.C. surgeon. She told me that one of her best friends worked for Arrow and just got dismissed due to Trump's DOGE office. He told her that he believes the entire Arrow program will be eliminated this year. I realise this is secondhand information, but I've no reason to think she was BSing me. The topic came up spontaneously when I told her of my interest in UFOs. Of course, no way to know if he was speculating or speaking because of insider knowledge. Anyway, maybe worth looking into. At very least, it's interesting that an Arrow employee was doged, a new US verb, I guess. So, yeah, and for those outside of the US, Nathan, correct me if I'm wrong, the Doge office stuff was Musk's group that went in to basically look at, I think he was given almost carte blanche to look at US finances. Fast forward to now, and Musk is basically leaving his unofficial, unelected position.
Yeah, that's right.
And yeah, cracking on with whatever it is Elon Musk does on a day-to-day basis. But is that about right? Yeah.
That's about right, yeah. And I'm sorry that we've given the rest of the world Doge as a new word to have to use in our lexicon. But the Department of Government Efficiency, which I don't think was really ever really an official department, but yes, correct, headed by Elon Musk, who was just given kind of a special temporary federal employee status of some kind, which gave him access to security clearances and those things to do those various hatchet jobs on agencies and positions. And there's a lot of debate in the U.S. as to whether any of that was very effective or just more of kind of like stagecraft and misdirection or political points that the Trump administration trying to score with its constituents in being very frugal with government money. So we'll see if that actually had that effect. But very interesting. Interesting that we're getting this outspoken post tweet by Luna asking for defunding Arrow. And then you'll recall as well that Kirkpatrick, I think, responded to her on LinkedIn or something. Yeah, that guy just can't stop talking. But it was a very, I don't remember the exact language he used, but it wasn't very positive towards her, called her basically a conspiracy theorist and that, you know, she's actually kind of crazy. So I don't know if that guy's doing himself any favors, but he's certainly continuing to toe the party line that there's nothing to this and that, you know, people, including Congress people, are all mistaken in chasing the wrong kinds of things.
Where do you stand on Arrow? Because this is an organization now that over the last couple of years under Kirkpatrick, I forget the gentleman's name who was the interim boss, and then we had John Kozlowski, who is the current director of Arrow. It seems to have gone from, initially there was some skepticism. It was kind of mixed. I think I remember speaking to Dan when it first happened, and we were kind of cautiously optimistic. Here's this guy who is completely neutral, as we were told, but turns out it wasn't the case, that maybe we'll get something from this. As it went along, it became clear it wasn't going to happen. We've then, under Kozlowski, had some of the folks that people would think would be champions of the UAP topic speak quite positively about him, mm-hmm. and saying, you know, perhaps Arrow will still have a place in this conversation. to then see folks like Luna, who are in reasonably powerful positions now within government, given the way the elections went and the kind of things they're in control of, calling for a defunding of Arrow. So it seems to have been a real roller coaster for Arrow. And for many folks, they had no place left in the conversation. They were still hanging in there. Would you rather see them go or stick around under the kind of direction they were in now?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think they've got a credibility issue, and that's it's a difficult thing to repair. That they have, we have some contrasting statements. So we have Kirkpatrick and the Arrow reports that have said there are nothing to these testimonies, that these individuals that came forward were mistaken. They confused one classified program for something else, and misunderstood what that classified program was about, basically casting shade on all of these whistleblowers who came forward with their personal testimonies. But then you have the whistleblowers themselves saying, well, I went in to talk to Arrow. I shared, you know, a lot of details with them. Mm-hmm. I never got, a call back from them. I was never mentioned in the report. It's as if it never really happened at all. So you've got a lot of conflicting statements going on. And I think it's difficult for the public to understand to what degree is this agency really being transparent with the public at large. And, you know, you recall there were also sort of, I don't think we ever knew who their names were, but there was a kind of a council of advisors in Arrow that Kirkpatrick sort of answered to in terms of the direction or whatever they were going to do with the program. And I think that particular group had been disbanded. And then, like you said, the changing of the guard with, I think it was Tim Phillips initially, and then Kozlowski. And Kozlowski seemingly a little bit more open to some of these ideas. But nevertheless, we haven't really, I think, gotten the true reveals that people were hoping for. But this is also the challenge of this subject, right? It's sort of like everyone believing there's something here. And if we don't get anything from Arrow, then people always think that it's a sham effort. And maybe there really isn't anything there, right? What if that were the real truth here? And I think it's hard to really to get to that truth and to satisfy the people that really believe there is something to all of this.
Yeah. I don't know with Arrow, because Kozlowski does seem to be better than Kirkpatrick was at speaking. I never got the impression Kirkpatrick liked the topic, even if he was, whatever you want to call him, psyop, disinformation, a pawn, a puppet, a guy who just, you know, was put in there to discredit the topic. I just got the feeling he didn't like the topic. And it was almost he'd been asked to do this for a year or 2 years. We'll bring you out. It's going to be, you know, you'll get some shit from this community, but who are they? And then we'll move you on into your kind of cushy job that kind of sets you up. I just always got that feeling like he was like he was dealing with something that was far beneath him.
That's right. That's right. And that was certainly the attitude that I think he projected on in his public, well, he's still projecting in his public statements, you know, that he's sort of the smartest guy in the room and everybody else is mistaken. His tone on this subject is very condescending. So, yeah, I think that he I agree with you. He sort of seems to be a guy that was maybe pushed into this role. He's not particularly interested in it. If he actually truly is interested in it, he's really hiding that very well. Of course, remember, we've got the whole Brandon Fugel thing with Skinwalker Ranch. Yeah. Where he was, you know, in the photograph there in the room and then claiming that he'd never met with Brandon Fugel, or, you know, misremembering the details. So it's hard to take the guy seriously, hard to trust what he's saying. And like I said, we've got a credibility gap here that's difficult to overcome. So I don't know what Arrow can do, quite frankly, to restore the trust of the people. What do you want to see? Let's put it this way. Is I think you'd want to see whistleblowers who have spoken with Arrow, who come forward in the public and say, I'm seeing exactly what I provided to them. I'm seeing them present that information as I presented it, and I trust Arrow. So if you get more people with, I think, the credibility of folks like Mario Woods, the stories like Michael Herrera, if they're coming forward and saying, you know, I did all this stuff, did it by the book, they took my testimony and they're providing it back to me. They're also presenting it to the public in the way that I provided it to them. If we're seeing that kind of parity there, then I think trust and credibility begins to be restored. But I'm not holding my breath that we're going to see that. So we shall see. And remember, recently as well. We had the whole interview with Matthew Brown with Jeremy Corbell and George Knapp. And Brown, I mean, this was one of the more, I think, sobering parts of that interview, where Brown was saying that he listened or read the transcript of the conversations between the Senate leaders and Kirkpatrick, and that he knew Kirkpatrick was lying, and that really kind of sent the chill down his spine. So what's going on there? I don't know. We didn't get more details from that. Like, what was he lying about? But it certainly doesn't improve the credibility of that organization at all, in my opinion.
No. I wonder if they're looking for impact. And I can't remember. I discussed this with Dan, with yourself, with Micah Hanks, all on the Matt Brown topic. Is it best folks go to a Knapp and Corbell or a Ross Coulthart at News Nation to get their stories out in terms of being a whistleblower, rather than try and go through official channels, where even now we're still seeing a lot of mixed messages that the protections aren't there. There's a lot of false promises and people are still scared to do so. And it seems like in terms of an audience and getting your message out, those avenues with Coulthart, Knapp, Corbell seem about as good, if not better, than going through some of the official channels to get stuff done.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is one of those issues where which journalists, which media organizations are going to be willing to listen to you? And clearly we've seen that the bigger news outlets are not willing to take it as seriously as some of the smaller ones. And you've got folks like Knapp and Corbell who obviously clearly willing to take this information. And for better or worse, Jeremy does get a lot of data from people who send him things, you know, both data that maybe he shouldn't have or should have in the public domain or classified documentation. Same with Ross Coulthart. But these are folks who are putting their necks out there. They're really trying to push forward and produce some credible information. And I think, you know, people just, I feel this way. There's frustration at times in how that is done, how that is handled, that you want these guys to really do it the right way, release content that is going to have the biggest impact, that is going to be very smartly vetted and looked at from a lot of different perspectives. And I think what we've seen is a bit of a mixed picture there. We've had releases from both of those folks, you know, Corbell, Knapp, and Coulthart, that have, you know, you've seen them. It's been like a big buildup, a big drop. And then within a matter of hours, you've got, you know, kind of the debunker crowd, the skeptical crowd, providing some very strong counterfactual evidence that counteracts those claims. And that really does, it hampers that effort. So if they're not doing their due diligence in screening that material before they release it to the public, then it ultimately does them a disservice. But I'm grateful that they're there, right? So it's a complex issue. I'm glad they're there, but it's complicated.
Yeah, there is also, I think Corbell's mentioned this, of course, in the past, and I think it's fair and right to say this, that you get that instant crowdsourcing effect when you release something, and within minutes, let alone hours or days, if someone's made a claim or released some footage, you can very quickly have a whole community vet that for you in a way that perhaps individual sources in the background can't, or can be flawed or biased. You're getting a huge pool of people looking at something all at once. Not that there aren't flaws or bias within that, but you get a general consensus which comes out pretty quickly. I remember, was it Palm Springs? Was that the name of the incident when Jeremy Corbell had some folks talking about it?
Right.
And there was footage released. Was it footage or a picture, video or a picture?
Yeah.
And very quickly, people found the exact location, the exact time, and that there was a flare drop.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, and obviously you can go into any direction with that conversation, that's nonsense, that's a distraction, that's what the military wanted, very Phoenix Lights-esque, but it was information that perhaps could have been looked at earlier that may have helped the evolution of the story. It didn't debunk the story completely, but it certainly brought up a lot of questions. And that, I think, to be fair, looking at the Matt Brown situation, or Matthew Brown, I always call him Matt Brown as if I know the guy. Looking at the Matthew Brown situation, there's not a whole lot to debunk in terms of him. There's been no character assassination.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much been, here's his testimony. He's spoken well. He's spoken nervously. Mm-hmm. I think he's came across as very genuine and authentic. And the only questions really are whether you believe what he's saying. And then if you believe what he's saying, is it a case of he's seen something that is a true reflection of what it is he saw? or is it something that was put there to distract? We don't know that yet, and we're looking obviously forward to more Matthew Brown conversation hopefully coming out in the nearer future. Again, when we spoke, I can't remember, the last month has been a bit of a blur for all kinds of reasons, but I felt when I first saw Matthew Brown's interview coming out, it was filmed before the hearings. Mm-hmm. I thought the second part of the interview made it seem it was filmed around about the hearings, and then part three came out and it was like, oh, I think this was like mid to late March, because Nap references the 60 Minutes special on the drones, mm-hmm. and says it had just aired. So for me, I think I checked it was the 16th of March or something that aired this year. Mm. And just doing a little bit of very rough investigating as well, that must have been only 6 or 7 weeks ago this was filmed. So I'm looking for more clarity around the dates and things there as well. But yeah, it seems a lot of distrust in Arrow. I don't know if it's got a future. This whole defund thing seems to be a bit of a hashtag in the United States. It certainly was for a while. I remember defund the police was one, wasn't it, for a while? And there was defund various other things. But we all know in 2023, 24, 25, people love a bandwagon to jump on. So
100%.
Hey-ho.
But I think I want to say one more thing about this, and that, I think it's an important effort that we should try to figure out a way to, for Knapp and Corbell, and for all, I don't have an insight on this, so I don't know, maybe they do this, but if they aren't doing this, what I'd like them to do is really gain the favor and trust of some trusted skeptical perspective, right? And just have them pre-vet some of this content. I think this would be true for Coulthard as well. I'd want someone, this is why, like, I think, Mick West, he does a lot of dog and pony show stuff on social media, but nobody wants to really play with him because he doesn't seem to be a good faith actor. He's got his shtick. He does his thing. He's just always going to come out and look for the most prosaic explanation and say, well, it's always prosaic. But, could you get somebody else who has a more open-minded approach, but also skeptical? And could they pre-vet some of this content before it gets released so that it allows Corbell and Knapp to I think, honestly say, we've shown this to some folks who aren't necessarily pro UAP, and they've said it could be this, it could be that. And instead we get a very partisan sort of release of information. And I think while that has an impact, we certainly like the folks that are pushing for this. And if you believe there's something to the story, you want to see them be as full-throated and supportive of it as possible, but you don't want to see them get shot down immediately by some legitimate criticism. Hmm. And so could we develop some better partnerships with these groups that allows for some internal vetting to take place before publicizing this information? And then I think that only strengthens the content that they produce, because they can say, we still don't know what this is. It could be this. No one has a legitimate explanation, but we want to make sure the public sees it now. And then you can get some voices who say, yeah, I was involved in looking at this content with Jeremy beforehand, and I proposed a counter hypothesis. It could be true. I don't know for sure. But that's a different tone than you get from the Mick West of social media that say it's never unexplained, never anomalous, never mysterious.
Yeah, they just go quiet, and that tends to answer that question. It's mm-hmm. really funny. I was out for a meal a couple of nights ago with a big group of friends. Some of them I don't really know. They're people I've just basically going back to the gym regularly. Met some new folks as part of a big group, and we were out for food. And next to me, one of the women in the group asked them, you've got a podcast apparently? And I was like, yeah, I do, yep. What's it about? UFOs? And she was like, I find all that stuff really interesting, real surface level interest. And she mentioned she had a friend who was really, really, really into the UFO topic. And just the week before that, and shit you not, this was the conversation, and it was really funny hearing it. See, honestly, I don't go out that much. Like, I am that busy, and genuinely, with family, life, gym, and work, I go to the cinema myself. I don't spend a lot of time out, kind of functions or nights out and stuff like that. So it was really weird hearing this in real life. She mentioned her friend had went right down the UFO rabbit hole, was really into things, heard about the Tic Tac event, normal general public kind of guy, and he was like, oh, right, okay, I'm going to get into it. And he said really quickly, he fell deep down the rabbit hole. He then found Mick West, Metabunk is the site that Mick West, yeah?
That's right.
He found that, trying to look up for more Tic Tac information. seen McWest's explanations, and she said he was like, oh, well, I'm really disappointed because it turns out all this is explainable and this guy is telling you exactly what it is. And it was really funny to hear like her friend's perspective. And then that reflected on her because she went, oh, so this guy, McWest, like a UFO expert. And I was like, not really. I mean, he does some great stuff depending on your views on things. It's really interesting to see his content at times, but he very much goes the other extreme where you've got folks who want to see UFOs and everything. He seems to always want to see the negative, and there are times he can't explain something and just seems to go quiet. And you're like, well, that's the stuff you could really win people like me. Not, he doesn't need to win me round. He doesn't care, I imagine, but he would win folks like me round if he came out and went, do you know what, folks? I don't believe X, Y, Z, A through to L, but do you know what? There are one or two things here genuinely have me stumped. And that stuff, I think, is genuinely quite intriguing. Not saying that aliens, I don't believe in that or whatever, but I think this could be really interesting if investigated properly, but he doesn't. So it was interesting to hear there's a member of the public that was really into the topic, very quickly found his content, and immediately went, oh, this guy seems to know what he's talking about. He presents himself well. He speaks well. He's very eloquent. And yeah, there you go. So,
agreed. Yeah, I mean, we like clean answers, and I think that's you can see why that's appealing to people that either fall into that camp or fall into the believer camp, if you want to call it that. And I just think that we've got to mature beyond that dichotomy. We've got to really hold space for it being unknown, right? And we and I find it interesting that you've got a lot of speaking of age of disclosure, you've got a lot of really high placed folks that have had access to intelligence and information, and they make statements that still say we don't know what this is. You know, we've investigated it, we've used everything we have. Kozlowski said some more things. We still truly have some anomalous things that we cannot explain. They fall into this bucket of unknown. And for Mick to sort of take that and always say, well, it's still just the low information zone, and so people just insert aliens, but it's never going to be aliens. I mean, to take that kind of a stance that is never going to be X, I think isn't very mature. And it would give him, quite frankly, more credibility if he were, like you said, if he were more likely to say, maybe it truly is mysterious and anomalous and it could be otherworldly. I just don't know. But to have such certainty, I think, is pretty off-putting for many folks. And he would, I think he'd be a stronger advocate for his work if he were to be more intellectually honest with the fact that he just doesn't know sometimes.
There's a lot of news items to touch on through listener questions, but very quickly before we get to those, a couple of things just to bring up. That Ryan Reynolds production company, Ryan Reynolds of Deadpool fame, folks, of course, and co-owner of Wrexham Football Club in the UK, his production company, looks like they're making a film about George Knapp. And what I'll do is read the kind of blurb from some of the statements that have come out on some of the movie websites. Is Jurassic World director Colin Trevorrow is trading dinosaurs for aliens as he is set to direct a new film focused on Area 51. Deadline reports that Trevorrow has signed on to direct and produce an untitled conspiracy thriller at Paramount Pictures focused on Area 51. Ryan Reynolds' production company Maximum Effort is producing the untitled project, with Reynolds receiving an executive producer credit. The film will be set in the late 80s and follows the local Las Vegas TV news journalist who first broke the story of Area 51. So without naming George Knapp, it seems to be about George Knapp and his breaking of that whole story around Bob Lazar. So I would love, given its early days, that might never see the light of day. It might not even get to casting or be greenlit, but it seems to be there's something there, there's interest, and I would love to see that story of George Knapp brought to the big screen. What about you?
Agree. Yeah, I think it'd be really fascinating. Lazar and Knapp, I mean, that's a classic combination and a really intriguing time in that sort of lifespan or the history of ufology. That was a big moment, having somebody like Lazar step forward with the details that he had. So, yeah, I mean, the more the merrier. The more stories like this, the better, in my opinion.
On that note, I received, I don't know, Nathan, if you had heard, a couple of weeks ago, I pre-ordered what I thought was the Bob Lazar documentary. So that's still got a coming soon tag on it. I think it's coming this summer. So anytime in the next couple of months.
What's the name of it? Do you remember?
Bob Lazar and you, the, yeah, I don't know. Let me check. Project Ravateur.
That's right.
Is that the name of it? No, that was the name of the company. So it is S4, the Bob Lazar story. So yeah, so see when you go on the website, it's got official film poster and then pre-order now. So I clicked on pre-order now, ordered, and I've received the poster. Really cool. I got like, you can get all different sizes, including theater size. I've got like a standard one. I've got it signed by Bob Lazar. So I'm going to get that framed one day when I get my own office and stuff. I enjoy the Bob Lazar story and the mythos behind it. But I thought I was pre-ordering the documentary. It looks like I have just ordered a poster, which is a little bit misleading to the folks on Project Gravitour, if any of you listen. So I have essentially paid for a poster and don't seem to have a copy of the documentary for when it's due to be released. That's fine. That's on me. But I do think it's a little bit misleading that you're not getting a copy of the documentary around that as well. But hey-ho. Yeah. That's on me. I'll take the hit on that one, folks. But they do have some left.
Yeah.
UFO fanboy and me had to order it. And also, there was Grant Levac, who's been a guest on the podcast before, does some wonderful work from the UFO scene, especially in Australia. He had a post out, breaking news, Five Eyes were engaged in discussions with the UAP Task Force in 2021. Essentially, the statement read that new documents released through FOIA reveal that Five Eyes partners, Canada, Australia, and the UK, were scheduled to be briefed by the UAP Task Force on the 15th of December 2021. What's interesting about this, and especially from that Australian side of things, folks, was the former Australian Chief of Air Force and now Vice Chief of Defence, Air Marshal Robert Chipman, previously testified before Senate in both November 2022 and February 2023 that Australia had not been in discussions with the US on UAPs, and released emails now suggest otherwise. For me, there's not a lot to talk about there, but it's just a fact for me that the UK, the US, Canada, Germany, France, all these countries seem to take a real back, not just a back step, but several back steps and hide in this. We do a full Homer Simpson into the hedge when it comes to the UFO topic here. Another Simpsons reference in this one, folks, sorry. But yeah, and we really do just let the US lead on this. It seems to be they get a briefing and it kind of disappears from there. So again, over to the United States to lead the way, Nathan.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really grateful for the work that Grant does. He seems to be doggedly pursuing this, and I really appreciate that. And a shout out to the other folks who are really submitting all the FOIA requests and trying to get as much information as they can about what's truly taking place. But I think it does. It speaks to the fact that you're right. Nobody wants to stick their necks out ahead of the U.S., that there are, in fact, conversations that do take place with these agencies sort of behind the scenes. And keep in mind that the size scope of these governments, they're large and they can have smaller organizations within those governments that are doing things. And maybe the high level spokespeople aren't aware that those conversations are truly taking place, or if they are, maybe there's a little bit of misdirection there or semantics, like we didn't talk to the U.S., but we did talk to, you know, this contractor who works on the UAP task force. You know, it could be something of that nature. So hope Grant continues to go after that and we get some further revelations from that discovery.
Yeah, I think everyone will know John Greenwald from the Black Vault and all the work he does when it comes to FOIA. But for the love of God, John Greenwald will say himself he has thousands of FOIA requests in at any one time. We know FOIA requests can be rejected, refused, turn up nothing, and then you put in something again and it comes up mysteriously. So the more people, the merrier who can do that and do that process well. So fair play to Grant, who's really grabbed the bull by the horn, or the kangaroo by the ears out there in Australia. Mm-hmm. So yeah, well done, Grant. Keep that up. Any news topics before we move on to listener news that you think are worth a mention, Nathan?
No, let's jump into it.
There's a few we haven't touched on that are definitely going to come up here now. So Rob asks, topics of interest, Skywatcher's latest, and also any reactions from anyone in Congress to Matt Brown's revelations. Is there more to come from this, I wonder, or is that it? That is all for part one. Part two will be out in the next couple of days. You can listen to this episode already in full ad-free and with no sponsors for less than the price of a coffee. If you head on over to Patreon or Apple, you can subscribe to the podcast for less than the price of a coffee or take up the 2 weeks free trial that are available on those platforms. You can head on over to Spotify and search That UFO Podcast Premium and get access to this episode in full, no adverts, no sponsorships, and also with some extra bonus content as well. Thanks for listening, folks.